Today's episode of the Inside EVs podcast is brought to you by E-Range EV Tyre. E-Range EV tyres are specifically engineered for electric vehicles. Using an advanced manufacturing process called liquid phase mixing, E-Range EV's EcoPoint 3 technology creates a tyre with lower rolling resistance and longer range, while offering low levels of wear and high grip. All this while staying affordable. Go to erangetyres.com. That's E-R-A-N-G-E tyres.com to find your EV's next set of tyres.
That funky musical ditty, combined with the fact that it is Friday, the 1st of March, to be precise, happy new month, means it's Inside EVs podcast day. Hi, friends. As usual, I'm your host, Alex Goy, joined by Miss Go Electric, Lacey herself, Hazel Southwell, and the boss man, Patrick George. How are we doing this week, friends?
Doing great, Alex.
We like
that. Really good.
Fun fact about everyone listening to this, that intro music, Alex plays that live every week with a keytar himself. We've offered to record it and play it, but he insists on doing it live. It's his passion. I mean, he nails it every time.
I just find that if you do stuff like that live, it feels more authentic. It's like when you're a kid and you think the actors do the adverts live. It's like that. I just want to bring a bit of that magic to proceedings to give you all a greater experience.
Indeed.
Honest. Anyway, there's a lot of news going on, so it's time for EV News. EV News. Right, friends, big news out of Ford. The Blue Oval has done a thing. Finally, Ford F-150 and Mach-E owners can use Tesla's supercharger network. They can order their NACS plug to go over the CCS plug, what they have. Both the supercharger network and Ford EVs are getting over-the-air updates so they can talk to one another. You know, this is a huge deal. Ford has said, though, that 80% of its EV owners charge at home, but they said public charging is a pain point. This will hopefully go some way to relieving that. Now, the adapter itself is free of charge until June the 30th. If you don't get one by then, it's $230. You can get in touch with Ford and they'll send it to you. Now, a few things to note on it. It can work with any CCS plug, but if it's not Ford, it probably won't work with the Tesla supercharger. Nice integration news in there. You don't need a credit card or anything like that. You can just plug it in. It'll work with your plug and charge account and Ford Pass. You don't need the Tesla app. You just need the Ford Pass. And another cool little update, CarPlay and Android Auto will start to offer native route planning to superchargers, which is kind of handy. Pricing for your supercharged electricity is set by Tesla. So that's a bit TBC at the minute because there's no comment from Tesla's press office because it doesn't exist. One final little bit to add to the headlines is that it won't work with V2 150 kilowatt chargers. That's not a thing, but V3, V4 and above, you are hot to trot. So our resident Americans, Ford has finally done it after announcing it last year. You can charge your Ford on a Tesla supercharger. There's now 15,000 more ways for Ford owners to charge on the fly. What does this mean? Like, how big is this?
I'm super massive. Hyped for this. Yeah, massive, massive. Lacey, you want to go first?
No, that's okay. You go ahead, Frederick.
I'm really impressed with how well Ford executed this. Just the seamlessness of it. It's really well thought out. You get this thing for free for a few months. It you don't even need the Tesla app. You plug it right in and it starts charging. It's our contributor Tom Maloney, you know, who runs the State of Charge YouTube channel and, you know, longtime charging expert and contributor, did it yesterday. It was seamless and perfect. I mean, if you're a Ford EV owner, like, your life just got, I think, 100% better because you have 15,000 like very good and well-placed and reliable fast chargers to draw on, you know, just like Tesla owners did. I think we're going to have some headaches with like cord placement because these Tesla chargers are all set up to charge Teslas, which have their charging ports in the back. And, you know, the Fords are up front. So that's going to be weird and awkward. But generally, like, this is a masterstroke by Ford, and like they kick this off, and now the rest of the industry is doing it. GM's doing it, Hyundai's doing it, even Toyota's doing it. I think everybody at this point, but like VinFast, you know, this year is going to be awesome, and it starts here. So like I'm hype for this. Lacey, what do we think?
Yeah, I'm super excited for this too. I think it's an elegant solution. It's easy. It very much is reminiscent of how the Magic Dock works. It's a very simple process, just latching it in. I love that it has plug and charge. As far as specification wise, it's 1,000 volts DC and it's 300 amps, but that's the continuous rating. It will actually boost for about 10 minutes at 500 amps. So that's good news to see that they've been able to basically give you adequate power. I mean, the Mach-E can only take 150 kilowatts max, and same with the Lightning, but this is really great news. And I saw a video that Mach-E Vlog had put up. They tested it out as well, and they plugged in at 44% state of charge, and they were getting 122 kilowatts, I think. So it looks like it's delivering good fast speeds, and it has temperature sensors in it, so it will know whether or not it needs to shut down, if it gets too hot or anything like that. So it just seems like a very well executed. Now for me, like, the only thing is that the sides of it look really slippery, and I know you probably don't want to mask it because you want the heat to dissipate, but I would be afraid of dropping it. But hopefully dropping it, it won't break or anything like that. So it looks pretty solid to me.
It looks pretty robust. Yeah. This is super exciting, and it's also, people have wondered, you know, what's in it for Tesla to open up, like, arguably the
money.
Best thing. Yes, arguably best thing about that car is the charging network. So what's in it for them? Well, this turns them into a charging company powerhouse, billions of dollars in revenue. One analyst I talked to last year said up to $20 billion with a B dollars by 2030, just in charging revenue. So like, they just made bank without having to really do anything except work with some other OEMs, do some software updates to open up the network, and just say, have at it, folks. It's just like free money for Tesla. It's free money. So very.
Yeah. And I've seen a couple people post about like their charge rates that they're getting. And keep in mind, like, the supercharger network, a lot of places have time frames where they charge differently. So maybe at before noon, it's a 30 some odd cents, whereas in between noon and 8 p.m. it's higher rates. But it seems to correlate similar to how the Magic Dock pricing was, at least when I charged the Nissan Ariya on that, which was close to 50 cents per kilowatt hour. So yeah, it is going to be a little bit more expensive. But Tesla said that owners of Ford EVs can go through the Tesla app. I know this is probably not incorporated with the plug and charge feature, but that you can actually subscribe to their membership and get those rates. Who knows, like probably like $5 to $7 or something like that per month. I don't know, but you can subscribe to their membership and then you'll get those rates that are lower that Tesla owners also get. So it depends on how much you use DC fast charging, if that's worth you investing in, but it will be a little bit more expensive for others.
In your view as a Rivian driver, yeah, when this similar system becomes open up to you, do you think subscribing to the Tesla network is going to be worth it to you?
100%. Yes. Nice. Only because, you know, when I tested that Nissan Ariya on the Magic Dock, the charging curves were completely different from what I was used to using any other type of DC fast charging, whether that was from ChargePoint or from Electrify America or EVgo. I was getting more of a consistent flat higher rate on it. And so I prefer that, not only for the reliability and the ease in the network and knowing just how many Tesla superchargers there are across the country. Like, and I don't think people realize the scale of how many they're putting in each day.
Yeah.
They are ramping up so fast, building out so many locations, and they're the number one winner on NEVI programs right now. So the National Electric Vehicle Infrastructure, where they've been bidding for those federal dollars to put in stations all over the country. And So just all of it combined, I think, is like a no-brainer for me to want to pay a little bit extra on a road trip. Now, keep in mind, I do get 410 miles of range on my max pack, so I don't have to stop as often. So that's also another consideration. But
amazing me, flex right totally now, by the way, it. Too. Like, yeah.
By the way, I have an enormous range.
Yeah. I'll use it when I charge, which I don't
That's
have to.
That's why I bought it. I only do road trips, so it's like...
just jumping into the comments real quick, EVDC said, Tesla is only showing to others that Tesla cars have a better charging experience. It's marketing. I kind of agree, but I kind of don't. I think it's like, yeah, Teslas do have a better charger experience, but they're giving it to everyone else for money. I think Tesla, in this instance, isn't showing that the Tesla charging experience is better only if you own a Tesla. Tesla's showing everyone that they can make money.
Tesla has said that their supercharging business could be a whole different company. Like
we've always known that, though. Like, I think every EV owner in America who doesn't own a Tesla has like wanted to put their fist through the Electrify America screen while they stare across the street longingly at the Tesla drivers who don't even give it a thought. Just plug in. It's like, this is the car. I didn't even think about it. We've always known it was better. Like that's really, this is years old information. So, now everybody gets to experience it. I know Hazel, this has been a real America centric conversation, unfortunately, because this is a North American program. It's US and Mexico. It's not the play in Europe yet. You know, CCS is still very strong there because I believe the EU has mandated that to be the standard in Europe, right?
There never was this proprietary, well, not never, but like the whole proprietary plug situation is not something that's allowed in Europe. Like Apple have come up against this and various other things. For the majority of Europe, like everyone's been able to use Tesla superchargers technically because the plug would fit. But obviously the other thing that's cool about this isn't just that you can plug in, it's that it's completely integrated into the Ford system, that you're paying through the Ford system, that you're not then having to set up a new thing with the Tesla superchargers and then they're like, is it a Tesla, and like, you know, trying to do some like god awful car VPN workaround and all of these things. And I think an especially nice touch for it is that the Apple CarPlay and the Google, or it's Android, whatever.
Android also.
Yes. Will start to incorporate those superchargers into the routes in terms of planning, charging plans and stuff like that. I think, although it maybe took, because I think a lot of people would be like, how long does it take to like get a converter out to like every customer? Like, why did this take
a couple weeks time? Yeah, it's like, if you order now, it'll be like about a month, I think, before you get them. I think,
but like it obviously they announced it and then it didn't happen instantly by any means. It clearly it's because they have thought that through. They've thought through the customer experience. It's not kind of just have a converter and like see how you go or whatever. This is something where Ford are thinking about that fact that the Tesla supercharging experience is massively superior to what they can get with Electrify America and the various other charging networks. So it is something they want to offer the customers, but in a way where they remain within the Ford ecosystem and where they're not signing up to lots of stuff where there is that kind of marketing element. And that's also good because who wants to sign up for more things? You know, this is one of the very worst and most annoying things about electric vehicles is that even though there are many different kinds of gas stations, I generally, unless I wanted like, you know, some Nectar points or whatever in different, like loyalty card points in different ones, I didn't have to like sign up new details to be able to go to a Shell versus a BP or whatever.
It's one of my favorite things is like, I'll just come up on a fast charger, like some obscure network. And I'm like, what is this? And I find I have the app on my phone. Like, when the hell did I sign up for this? Like, what is this company? Why did I give them my credit card information? And I don't even remember doing that. Like,
it's because you appeared one day and we're on like 5% charge and went, this is my only option.
Yeah,
right.
Get on the phone and do that. Yeah.
Fiddling out all the things. Oh, it's needless stuff. But anyway, that is fantastic news. Less fantastic news this week, maybe, depending on how you look at it. The Apple Car Project Titan is dead. After years and years and years of speculation, we've known they've Apple's been trying to do the do. They say after years of work and $1 billion, which is a beautiful Dr. Evil moment.
Per year, $1 billion per year. That we know.
I was going to say.
a lot more than $1 billion. It was
billions of dollars. All the employees working on it have, they're discovering their fate, but a lot of them are going to be moved to generative AI. What a surprise. It's basically that the project itself has been in development hell for years. I remember Motor Trend came out with a whole story and we all thought it was going to be an exclusive and they went, this is what we think it'll be. But no one really knows anything about it or much about it, what it could have been, what it would have looked like, etc. One note I have on this is Dr. Andy Palmer, former CEO of Aston Martin and now electric car guru over here in Europe, did a couple of tweets on it, and he basically went, building cars is hard and Apple just found out the hard way how difficult it is. What are our thoughts on this? iCar, no, like, I was kind of pumped for it because the idea of having like an iCar, like all my Apple stuff just works. So there would be this sort of quality expectation and nothing I've ever bought from Apple has fallen apart or bits have fallen off it. So I'm kind of gutted that it didn't work. But at the same time,
I'm hyped for this. I'm very like... it's a shame that everyone's moving to generative AI because that sucks. But to be honest, the entire Apple Car product has essentially been generative AI, the automaker story. Because like from, you know, I can now say heading rapidly towards 40, I will never have to see another render of some absurd thing that someone claims is absolutely the Apple Car. I also think, it was always one of those projects that was a very, very strange sort of hypey thing where it was like, oh, Apple could create the iPhone of cars. They could create, you know, this sudden new invention, something that's going to completely disrupt the automotive industry. And I mean, maybe it would have, maybe there would have been something like that, but I feel that the moment for the iPhone of cars had passed long before we started really hearing about Project Titan as any form of credible thing. Like the idea of intelligent cars, of cars with, you know, integrated maps and messaging and all of these things, like all of that stuff, if Apple was going to create this groundbreaking car, they would have been there first thing with you know, GPS systems and things like that. And it's just never been within the wheelhouse of the stuff that they create that this was likely to be the radical project that it was often sold as, when, as Alex just actually said, like most people would just kind of like their phone to work a bit better with their car, to be honest. So like, I'm really glad I don't have to hear about this anymore. Hooray!
Hooray! I'm glad this has all gone to waste because it was bothering me.
I remember writing about this thing like almost 10 years ago and into the middle, like the end of last decade at like Jalopnik, and it just there's a lot you could say about this project. I think the thing that's really irked me the most in the last couple of days, I've seen many headlines that are like, in another bad sign for electric vehicles, Apple is pulling out of the car project. And like, let me tell you personally, like this thing was a shit show from like the jump. Like since like 2014, 2015, they never really knew what it was supposed to be. It was going to be a consumer car or a minivan at one point. It was going to be a robo-taxi, another. It changed direction between the like consumer car and autonomous driving pod half a dozen times. They had so much executive turnover. They were talking to every car company and supplier in the world, from like Jaguar to Ford to Stellantis or Fiat Chrysler at the time to Magna. And it never went anywhere. It just never. And I don't think anyone was really taking this seriously as a concept or an idea by 2018 or 2019. So whatever slowdown in EV adoption we're seeing right now, or the slowdown of rate of purchasing of EVs, has, I think, nothing to do with this project. Besides Apple probably wisely deciding to just pull the plug after 10 years of nothing. I don't know. Would it have been successful as a consumer car or a robotaxi? I don't know. I'll turn that to to the group. You know, it's.
I think this was more of an AV story than an EV story. I think that they wanted to achieve autonomous capabilities, and they realized how difficult it was going to be. I mean, I'm sorry, I don't remember the specification of how many miles total they'd driven in the 10 years for their autonomous, like whatever someone had written in an article, but it was like an incredible fraction of the amount in comparison to what Tesla does in like a day, which is like insane. But I think that that's more of the story here is because like you said, it did change. It did evolve as far as, you know, what leaks or what like mysterious things like it. We don't really know the truth. And I really hope there's like a documentary that comes out in the future because that would be just so fascinating on Apple TV. But I think
I want to see Adam Driver play several people at Apple.
He plays Tim Cook. He plays Johnny Ive. He plays multiple characters. He plays, you know, Steve Jobs' widow. I'm here for this. It'd be
I want to see Ray Winston as Johnny Ive.
You can see that. Yeah, it's I don't know. I think that if they come out with this thing, like for years, I thought just by virtue of Apple doing a car, I think it could have been a game changer at one point.
Yes.
I don't feel like I think that anymore because we're sort of past. Not go too much in that you're not here for cell phones, you're here for cars, right? But like we're sort of past like iPhone hype era. And now we're in like Vision Pro era. We're like, what the heck is that? And why is it so expensive? Like, I don't know if they could have pulled this off now, but 10 years ago, like as a legit Tesla competitor and they had an ecosystem around it with software and everything, like maybe, but even that would have been way ahead of the curve compared to where EVs are at now. So I don't know.
And it's also interesting to think of the supply chain, you know, that they would have to build up for this because, you know, Apple doesn't, I mean, they don't even make their own phones or anything like that. They pretty much ship everything out. So it's not like, I mean, obviously the design and the software is a massive portion of the user experience is amazing on Apple products, and to bring that to a car would be amazing. But, you know, having to build up a supply chain in the automotive business, that is not a small feat and a lot of money, which Apple has a lot of money. They do have a lot of money, but.
Enough to spend $1 billion a year on this.
Yeah. I mean, doesn't Apple have more money liquid than, you know, most countries at the moment, which is insane.
Yeah, but I mean, I think also, I mean, Lacey's 100% on the money about it's an AV project, not an EV project. It was something that the EV was almost a second consideration. Right. I would say that like the you know, they weren't. Apple is not renowned for its battery technology. Anyone who's ever had their laptop die will know this. Oh my God, I've just thought about like trying to replay like one. The wing mirror falls off your car and you have to replace the entire left side.
Have you backed up your car? We're going to need it for 3 weeks and you're going to get a new shell.
Yeah. But the I think it's been very interesting watching because we obviously saw this with VW canning Argo and some of the other programs that have been, the AV programs that have been really, really dialed back is that the ambitions of what is achievable beyond kind of autopilot stuff is
so far
off. Like they are so many thousands of like the amount of effort that's going to have to go in to get there is not, I think, something that there is currently a market for. Especially in the context of, you know, how you would have to price a vehicle for those kind of features and stuff. I just don't think. And if a company like Apple, where, as you say, it has all this liquidity, it has all this capacity, it is a software company. They did start out doing these things and making interfaces and making stuff that tries to kind of guess what you want and things quite badly. iOS still an old Mac OS still annoys me after about 10 years of using one. To be honest, I also think there is a small win for the automotive industry here because Apple would have been, as it is with its consumer electronics, so bad about right to repair, so bad about being able to kind of like get into the box or kind of do anything with the cars. And I think that is probably something they came up against as like something where there would have been some level of resistance to stuff like the way that the hardware was built and things. And I just don't think this was a good product space for them to be involved in.
It would have been interesting to see what their pricing structure would have been like if they would have gone to like a subscription model to kind of like avoid all that kind of stuff or whatnot, you know?
Yeah. 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 I suspect you would have been subscribing to your car.
Yeah. The last we had heard about this project, and again, this was all rumor, conjecture, and just like leaks. I think Bloomberg covered this really well for over the years. Last we had heard was in like January, and the latest or probably final plan was it was going to be like a electric SUV with level 2 plus autonomy, which can be defined as like hands off cruise control, eyes on, hands off. That would cost $100,000, and like I do not think the market needs more $100,000 electric SUVs. Like we're
like
good
the
on that.
Dyson, remember like the Dyson? Dyson?
Yeah.
Sal Camelli in the comments. What about the Dyson car? Is that dead as well? Yep, that died last year.
It
died last year. Sad.
It's. I think the really telling thing is, we've got legacy automakers who are kind of struggling to keep up, but in some way, shape or form managing with varying degrees of success, with varying degrees of kind of innovation in their various spaces. We've got Chinese companies that just are working really fast and really hard. And we have Tesla who came up seemingly out of nowhere all those years ago and just stuck with it and done the thing and done it well. But then you have tech giants and consumer giants like Apple, like Dyson, who have gone, well, it's a big reset moment for the industry. Everyone's going to start on a level playing field. We can do this. We can do this all on our own. And they can't. I mean, I wonder if there's actually think that my train of thought going the way it is. I wonder if there's an element of both of those companies doing a bit of a GM going, we can do all of this in-house, well, even though we don't know how to do it.
That's the thing is that I think the last take I have of this crazy project is that Apple already won. Apple already owns your car without having to sell a single car, because CarPlay is so popular and ubiquitous. And like GM, I don't think they realize the backlash they would spark when they said, you know, our future EVs are not going to have CarPlay, and how quickly their competitors were like, oh no, we're down with CarPlay forever. Like the Honda Prologue's going to have it. Ford is figuring out these cool ways to add like, you know, EV route planning and navigation with CarPlay. Like Apple One and future versions of CarPlay are going to take over your entire dashboard, like all two or three or whatever screens you have. So it was probably smart for them to stay in their software lane, but like the Apple car is every car now that has Apple CarPlay, and that's not going anywhere. So I don't know. I think that they're we've not seen the last of them in the car space. We're just not going to be buying any vehicles from them.
Yeah, it's better that they kept quiet and just like leaked a couple things instead of making like a public announcement like GM did. Like, we're going to be awesome and we're going to do all this cool stuff. And then,
no, you're not.
Yeah,
you are crushingly not okay at this.
Dumpster fire.
Everything is fine. on to happier news and news that's relevant for both me and Hazel. Renault has finally taken the covers off, revealed the production version of the new all-electric Renault 5. Bit of background on the Renault 5. Had a 24-year run starting in the 70s. The original petrol car sold millions globally, was on sale in America as Le Car. Though, weirdly, La Voiture would... Anyway. language nerd. The Renault 5 EV was first seen in 2021 as a concept. Now, the fun thing about this was that Renault wasn't going to do it. It was going to follow the path it was already on. It was going to do various different things. But the CEO, Luca De Meo, saw someone had sketched this up and kind of created something out of it, saw it and went, no, we're going to build that and we're going to build it quickly. So if you bear in mind a kind of a production cycle, is years and years and years. This was like 2021 or late 2020, and now it's here. It'll be on sale in France tail end of this year, rest of its markets 2025, I think. Over in the UK it's 2025. Deeply cool thing. It's based on the Ampera platform, which is the artist previously known as CMFB, which lots of other small cars will be based on, potentially some Nissans as well, but also the Renault 4 SUV. which will be very, very cool. Also kind of retro-y. You can get it with two, you can get it with two batteries, a 40 kilowatt hour, which will get you about 186 miles. And that will come with either 93 or 120 horsepowers, or a 52 kilowatt hour battery that will get you 248 miles. And you can have 147 horsepower out of that. Renault says 0 to 62 will take less than 8 seconds. Now, it weighs 3,196 pounds, or about 1,450 kilos, which is pretty cool. It's very, very small. Depending on which options box you tick, you can have up to 100 kilowatt, kilowatt fast charging. It has vehicle to load on the bigger batteries, bigger power output. It has its own AI assistant thing. And it's cheapish, €25,000, $27,000-ish. It also is confidently one of the best looking EVs out there. It is properly cool. It's embraced the retro thing beautifully inside and out. It makes a proper statement and it doesn't look like a egg. How excited are we for this, friends?
Looks awesome.
Yeah, it looks fantastic. A really stellar design that they did. It's like retro in the right ways. It's a great package. Like, I remember this. It reminds me a bit of the Dacia we talked about last week. It's like it's great to see like Europe come out with some really neat looking, innovative, interesting like electric compacts. Like it's a shame that that's not really going to translate into like what American buyers can get. But I'm glad this is out there. I'm looking forward to seeing them on the road someday.
This Ampera is, just so everyone knows, Ampera is like a new company that was formed for Renault, Mitsubishi, and Nissan, that alliance, to have new EV platforms on. So I think, is this like the first or the second one that is on this platform?
This will be the first. The Renault 4 will be the second. And then from there, who knows where she goes? Because, yeah, it's... If this works and it is a good platform and doesn't eat itself and what have you, it should be pretty mega and it should do the business for them. Last year, I drove a very, very early prototype of it on some snow and it was good fun. It was really good fun. It felt good, but it looked like a Clio and it was all a bit weird and it was very, very early. It's like, look, it has traction control. The traction control worked. So I can say on the snow, traction and brakes, quite good. But that's all we know. I think first drives of this will be later this year. The thing that gets me about it, though, is the price, is the cost. 25,000 euros, that translates
if they're genuinely delivering on that, then I think this is an exciting moment for OEM or like for legacy automakers, whatever we want to call them, but kind of more traditional OEMs. And obviously, there was a point where the Renault-Nissan alliance was ahead of Tesla in terms of the number of EVs it had on the road, and that has obviously massively flipped. I'm excited to see the company that did so well with the Leaf, like initially, and then just really seemed like it dropped the ball for years. Like it had the Leaf, yeah, and then it didn't have anything else. It had the Leaf and the Zoe.
The Leaf is done until the next version of the Leaf comes out.
Yeah,
I wonder what platform that will be based on.
But yeah, the because I know we were talking a few weeks back about this Skunk Works team to make a affordable EV platform for Ford, for instance, and that there is obviously a lot of effort across the board in terms of, I mean, probably less at like Bentley or whatever, but the large OEMs, the high volume OEMs, are looking for these reasonably priced EV platforms that they can make, and so I think it's great to see that the Renault-Nissan alliance has seemingly produced one of these and that they're confident in it. It's not, obviously, Renault's never go to the US, but Nissan's might. So that's not kind of like, it's not irrelevant. And there's also the fact that they're launching that new platform with not kind of like, oh, we've sort of made like a weird EV.
So if this is an icon. If this is 25,000 euros, that's like 10K less than an ID3, I think, about.
Something like that, yeah.
That's a hell of a deal. Yeah, that's very impressive. They pull that off. Because that was the big criticism of ID3, from what I understand. Besides the fact it's kind of whatever to drive, right? It's pretty expensive for y'all, you know, isn't it?
The Renault 5s have a history of being fun. They're little hot hatches.
And then if you look at kind of a similarly sized ish car, so just a quick scan, a Peugeot E208, which is, I guess, I think it would be in about the same ballpark. This is a little bit smaller than a Clio, but that's kind of what it goes up against. That's £31,000 to £32,000 at the lowest. That's just base. I mean, you lease it and you never actually pay that. But so that's £6,000 off for a more distinctive looking car that's going to be of the moment, that offers comparable range and performance. And
References the Renault 5's history, because, you know, the point of the Renault 5 was to make a big mass market car, like a little vehicle that you could sell just freaking loads of. And I think that's a nice thing. The only thing that I am a little bit disappointed, and I have just sent producer Danny this link, is a few years ago, they put out a car that it was a concept. It was an art concept between Renault and French artist Pierre Gonon, and it was the Renault 5 Diamant, which is like the most gorgeous thing in the entire world. And I love it so much. Wheels.
Looks too good.
I know,
it's so sweet. Oh. It was at Goodwood last year. It's so pretty.
I don't think I could control myself if someone let me sit in this. Like, that'd be it.
it's like, look, the strange thing I find about this, I think it's like anything plus time becomes, you know, you get sort of warm fuzzies about it. But when I was learning to drive, like, we were on the Gen 2 of a Clio, sort of a blobby thing. The Renault 5 had been out of production for like 10 years, there, give or take a couple either side. And it was sort of seen, because, you know, small French cars, they're either immediate icons or they're just wonky things that have dodgy electronics and are made of, you know, biscuit tins and home.
Yeah, it's one or the other. There's no in between.
Yeah, and that's kind of what the 5 was.
One of the best episodes of the Grand Tour was when they went to France for the. I don't know if any of you saw that, but if you haven't, you've got to watch it. It's hilarious on Amazon Prime.
It was sort of this thing that was like, well, it's not a Clio, and the Clios are a bit naff, and the Renault 5 something, you know, your mum drove. Now, all of a sudden, it's come back with the new concept, and it's all modernized and shiny. And everyone, myself included, just went, oh, my God, I must have one. I need that in my life. It's incredible. One thing I do really like about this, harping on about the design, is how close it is to the concept. It's not like BMW i8 concept to reality closeness, but it is still pretty tight. It's not sort of a pastiche of what could have been. It's like the headlight details cool, the squared off fog lamps. You know, on the concept car, they were sticky outy perspex things, which, you know, rip a pedestrian's leg off or something, and it had a 5 in it. And there were little bits that, you know, you saw couldn't make it. But this, it still pays homage to the original. It looks similar enough to the concept, and there's really neat touches. I thoroughly enjoy on the bonnet, on the hood, there's a little 5 logo. Now, that's a reference to the original car. That's where sort of engine heat went. It was just some slats. But here, it's a charge indicator. And it's those little nods where they just go, yeah, we are honouring the past and we're doing it properly. But at the same time, you can have this now and it's cheap. which I thoroughly approve of. Thoroughly.
And it's not even the only interesting, weird European EV debut to happen this week, right?
No. So this is...
But wait, there's more.
Like, the Renault 5 we knew was coming. So for those that aren't in the know, the Geneva Motor Show is back, and almost nobody went to it apart from Renault to unveil the 5 and BYD and a couple of other people. But not much big happened there. But Fiat decided it was going to use the same news cycle to almost bury some quite important news. There was a truly bizarre video with the CEO driving to a tiny Italian coffee shop going, by the way, we're revamping the Panda. So there's a new sort of 80s retro inspired Panda on the way. It's going to come as a battery electric vehicle, as a hybrid, or as internal combustion engine car. It's on the smart car platform, which the new Citroen C3, which Hazel and I spoke about at great length tail end of last year and adored. Same platform as that. The kind of weird thing about it is it's not just the Panda. So the Panda is now going to be a family of vehicles. It's going to be its own little thing. I guess kind of like Ram in that respect. It was the Dodge Ram and now it's Ram. So it's the Fiat Panda, but it's Panda XYZ. So you'll be able to have it as a city
car.
Please,
it's just Ram. Dodge Ram was my father.
Here's Mr. Ram. Just call me Ram. You can have it as a city car, which is where the Panda's roots lie, which is where one of the initial concepts, it looks like the old Panda, sort of. You can have it as a camper, which I find bizarre, a pickup, or an SUV. Now, what Fiat's very keen to talk about is how this will be a global car, because its markets are everywhere, not necessarily the US, but definitely South America, EMEA, so the Middle East, Africa and Europe, where Fiat sells a whole heap of cars. So it wants to use this car, this name, this platform to create sort of something for everyone. So in the UK, probably won't do many pickups or campers, but the SUV and the city car might go down great guns. But in South America, maybe the sleeper, maybe the camper, maybe the pickup, that would be the right thing for them. Interesting things about it, the design language is based on the Fiat Lingotto facility in Italy, which basically means there's lots of ovals in it because that's what the building looks like. It's all about aesthetics and ethics. So lots of recycled materials, things like that in it. We'll see the first proper production car in July of this year. And then there'll be a new one every year until 2027. Which is kind of mad. Patrick, you are the one that sort of drew my attention to it. I had no idea this existed. And I tried to keep on top of these things. So what draws you to this truly bizarre thing?
Yeah, this news and the video and all the photos dropped randomly on a Sunday afternoon with no warning. Neat. I like this design language, this family of EVs. By the way, they're also going to be hybrids and ICE vehicles, which is very unusual to do all three. They say it's a multi-energy vehicle, so I kind of debated, should we even cover this, right? But it seems pretty EV forward. No word if it's coming to North America or not. Like they say, this family of cars is going to sell everywhere. They talk about Europe and Africa and Latin America, where Fiat is huge. Not so much us. I don't know. But it's great. It's a very handsome design. I like that Fiat with this seems to be moving away from that really 1950s, 1960s design language they've had for a while, and they go a little more 80s retro, I think, which is fine with me because I like that rad stuff. It's also that last thing I think is like it's great to see Fiat's parent company Stellantis stepping up on the EV front, because for years they were EV skeptical and they stomped their feet and kicked and screamed about it and how expensive it is. And like all of a sudden, like we have some really interesting electrified vehicles coming from that company, like the Ram Charger, the new Dodge Charger EV. We're probably going to see in official form in a few weeks. There's this. So they like quietly just like came out of nowhere with a bunch of really cool battery powered stuff. So I'm here for it and hope this Panda makes it here, because some of these designs I think would do well in America.
Hazel, as our resident small quirky European car enthusiast lover fiend, what do you reckon to this?
So I think, like, just straight off the top, this is not a Fiat Panda. A Fiat Panda is a car about the quarter of the size of most of these renders, where you are the crumple zone. You could not make a Fiat Panda these days because the Fiat Panda would rightly be panned for being just completely unsafe. That is what the Fiat Panda was. It was an incredibly fun car. They were always great. I love Fiat Pandas. This is not one. It's been renamed. It's a Fiat Koala or something. Once you put that aside and sort of get past that, I think it's cool to see Fiat doing something interesting. I am disappointed by the scale of quite a few of these, in the same way that, you know, I don't like big minis and stuff. I don't think that's what Fiat is. And of course these are all in the render zone. And we don't know what anything that actually makes it production will be. I do like the little camper. I think that's super cute. I don't really know who would buy a pickup truck that small, but maybe there are people who would. I think it's disappointing to see the Stellantis girl who has it all approach where they're like, oh no, we're going to make them with all drivetrains, but the ICE will be ready to run on synthetic fuel. Yes, of course it will. That's like synthetic fuel.
That's how synthetic fuel works.
It's just really expensive.
That's a great point. I never thought of that. But you're
synthetic fuel ready. Yes, it's all petrol.
Yeah, it's not. Oil is the only thing. Like crude oil from the ground is something that's not synthetic about petroleum.
That to me is disappointing that they're not going all EV or even committing to a full hybrid thing. And I also do think that potentially means the packaging of the car will be compromised, because obviously the way you package an engine is very different to the way that you can package motors and like there's a significant space saving. The frame or the way you arrange the frame to, for instance, package a battery, whether you make that structural or whether you make it like a platform thing and whatever. If they make something like this, then I think it's cool. Lacey, would you buy this pickup truck? Have an EV pickup.
I love it. I love all these. These are so cool. I mean, granted, they're concepts. And I think that it's kind of an interesting conversation when you're talking about concepts, because some brands make concepts that are literally never, ever going to come to life. But then there are brands that provide concepts that there will be some production version of it. And maybe it doesn't look that close to what it is, but it's exciting to see this design language. Now, a couple of things that I like about it. One, it kind of reminds me actually of Nissan's like Chill Out or whatever those concepts that they came out with a couple of years ago. I think maybe it was, with all these varieties and all these pops of color. What I thought was cool is in the video that it's kind of like a modular design in the regard that, like in the video, there was like a piece that was on the front light bar that you could like twist off and then put it up on the roof rack and like twist it back on. Kind of like what we saw at the Consumer Electronics Show with the Kia MPVs, the electric like modular architecture vehicles.
The van things.
Yeah, they had like kind of a similar thing, which I thought was really neat to be able to kind of customize it in your own well. And I think kind of that's like, in my opinion, the future of the automotive business is that there will be more like factory accessories equipped with these vehicles when they realize that like the dealers are, you know, they need to make more money somehow. So they can do it in kind of that realm of it. But yeah, see the Nissan concepts, they look, I don't know, give me the same vibe. The other thing that I was going to say is that someone in the chat was talking about the 500E. So the 500E, they announced that Fiat was going to actually start producing electric vehicles for our market again in North America. And I think it was just last week that they announced that the first U.S. models were rolling off the line, and that customers who pre-ordered it, which they're sold out of whatever allocation that they were accounting for here, are starting to be delivered this month. So Fiat will be back as an EV maker or, availability for EVs here in the North American market very shortly. And so I'm excited. And I really hope that globally, I hope we get some variants of this.
That would be cool. I mean, it would be absolutely mega to see Fiat Pandas rolling through Manhattan. I would enjoy that immensely.
It would be.
And I want the camper.
That brand is kind of weird in the United States. Like, they came out of the gate real hot with the 500 about a decade ago, then the 500L, which is super weird. And they still sell the 500X crossover. People still buy it. I don't know why they buy that car new in 2024, but they do. It's like that brand could use a shot in the arm, an injection of something exciting and fun. This seems like a good way to get into it. And I think we all keep seeing that the next great frontier in EVs is like small and cheap, like the Toyota Corolla of EVs. And like whoever can pull that off and get those into our market is going to do really well.
Also, these concepts pass my critical test now for any EV concept, which is, would I like to see Barbie driving? Yes. So
Fair enough. And on that, we love a Panda. Godspeed, Fiat, in making them. In slightly different news, Consumer Reports, oh, they of testing things fastidiously and in lab conditions and what have you, has basically come out and said that plug-in hybrids are kind of good now. Last year in the US, 60% more PHEVs were sold than the year before. So this year, Consumer Reports tested 13 in a new style. So MPG was configured after its electric battery or their electric batteries were depleted. And the range you get on top of that is basically a bonus. They were tested for usability, charging, apps, like the apps you get with it, all that kind of stuff. And one of the neat comments from Kevin Williams' story was that, you know, they let you choose what your fuel is. If you want to be electric, you can. If you want to be ICE, you can. Whereas if you make the choice, if you have like a V8 or a Tesla, for example, you can't choose. So if you run out of one, you're kind of knackered. On this, I mean, it's something that it's... I think that there is that, especially in the UK, there are some people that go, well, if you've got a PHEV, it's not a proper EV, so you can't charge it publicly. How dare you? But when you consider that commutes are so short, I know we talked about commuting distances last week. If you have a plug-in that will do you 40, 50 miles on a charge, then you can have your cake and eat it. You can have your EV to and from work, plug it in overnight, off you go again, and then go do long distances and go do a big road trip if you fancy it without having to worry too much. Resident Americans, what are your thoughts on this? Do you agree? Do you disagree? Are you ambivalent to this news?
Me personally, I take things that Consumer Reports says with a grain of salt. But that's just my opinion.
Jeez.
I mean, they're fine, but I've just seen, like, I get fed some of their videos on social media, and it's like some woman that writes for them went on there and was like, I don't like this EV because some basic thing that's in all cars. I'm like, what? That's weird. Like, I don't like EVs because of this thing. It's like, wait, what? So it's just like, I don't know. For the stuff that I've read from them, I'm just kind of like, and also they just like bashed Tesla for a really long time. I don't know. It just seems like really weird and unjustified for a lot of the stuff that I've read on their platform, but that's just me.
I think that this comes down to, are automakers actually going to make these PHEVs? Because they don't like them, they don't want to, they're extra complicated, they're expensive, the profit margins on them are not as good as regular hybrids, and are people going to plug them in? Because that's the problem, is they never plugged them in. That was a huge issue in Europe. And you had all these drivers driving around, like lugging around dead batteries all the time because they never bothered with it. Like, I don't know if consumer behavior is gonna change in the way that it should, even if these hit on the market.
Do you think they could be regarded as a kind of gateway to EV ownership? Is that if people are nervous about perhaps infrastructure,
not if they never charge them,
but if used responsibly, if used as guided, do you think that, you know, this is especially, you know, you see the sales trend just shooting up 60%, do you think people are going, well, I kind of want to see what EV's like, but I don't quite think I'm ready to commit, like I live in the middle of nowhere, so I mean, I want the best of both.
I think a lot of people see them as an insurance in both directions. So both that it's not a step to full EV and kind of needing to continuously manage charging and stuff, but also that, for instance, and Alex will know, and I know this has happened in the US to some extent as well, there have been a few times where, like, people have been queuing for petrol and there's been no petrol in the UK recently. Like having a plug-in hybrid at that point, you're like, oh, I can still go and do things. There's going to be more of that. The security of a gas car is not going to be what it has been for the last, you know,
century,
70 odd years, because supply issues are going to start happening. There are going to be disruptions to things, and because this is how the world works. But historically that has happened. You know, this is not the first time. There's been plenty of fuel crises, but I personally, I was reading through the metrics and stuff that they'd adjusted for this, and it was all things like doing the fuel efficiency when the battery was depleted, and then like I'm not entirely because, like, especially because these cars do have regeneration, so the battery should never actually be completely dead. There should, unless you've somehow completely switched off the systems and stuff. I personally feel like the education needed for someone to use a PHEV effectively is the same education that they'd need to use an EV effectively, and therefore, these are just not very useful vehicles to have kicking around. I also just don't like the idea that we're still that we're in any way pushing vehicles as kind of innovative or a development step that do still have internal combustion engines in them. You know, it's been what, like last month they announced that it's been 2 years of 1.5 centigrade temperature change now. Like, we can't pretend that this is actually a tolerable situation.
In America, you absolutely can, because like the climate argument doesn't work with people here, like at all, which is like depressing but true. I think that like if the automakers come out with more of these PHEVs, like one potential good outcome is it spurs the growth of level two chargers everywhere, which we need. Like we've really over-indexed in this country on DC fast chargers, which are very expensive and difficult to build and use a ton of energy, when we probably should have like slower L2s everywhere, which are great for plug-in hybrids too, right? Because they don't need a fast charge. I'm not sure that's going to happen though. Like that's like a ideal outcome on paper. In reality, who knows? Like there's this great photo that Danny has up of this Hyundai that's parked, you know, and it's just parked at like an office park, and it's plugged into an L2 charger. Like, we need that like everywhere in America for EVs, for plug-in hybrids, and we're not near where we need to be yet. So maybe this will help move things in the right direction. But again, people got to plug them in, so I'm not optimistic.
Yeah, people want to get the tax credit. And in my opinion, it's a way for the automakers to prop up the service businesses or for their dealership partners to be able to still milk cash from the service profits for their partners. So that's just my take on it. I don't like plug-in hybrids, but I don't think... like people should have options. So if they want to go that direction, I just know that most people buy them because they get all the tax credit for the most part. Like a lot of them, there are the $7,500 tax credit. So they're just like, sweet, I can get a discount on this car and I can just drive it like a regular car, like I would anyways, and fill it up with gas.
Yeah, well, fair enough. Right. Well, on that, we have two final pieces of news. First of all, Lacey, you have something you'd like us to watch.
Oh, yes. So starting next week, I am going to be starting on my channel, Amisco Electric, a series for a couple different series. But the first one I'm launching is going to be a news segment where it's going to be maybe like 5 minutes long and digestible EV news with some of my insights input. But starting next week. So please subscribe.
Do a watch, subscribe, do a show, Lacey. All of the love, please, and thank you. And one final chunk of news goes to the boss man, Patrick George. Take it away, sir.
Yeah, this one's a bit of a bummer in some ways, but I want to let everyone know that this is the last episode for now of the Inside EVs podcast in its current form. This company that owns Inside EVs got acquired about a year ago. A lot's been changing behind the scenes. We have big plans for podcasts, for video, for newsletters that we are ramping up as quickly as we can with a small and lean and smart group of people. But for now, this means that we're hitting pause on the Inside EVs podcast as you know it. But it is going to come back later this year. Possibly in a different format of some kind. We have a bunch of ideas we're really excited about. I think that this site and this subject matter probably needs several podcasts. I have a lot of ideas there, including ones that have centered around the Apple Car, believe it or not. But
oh God, mate, I'm so sorry.
No, I'm here for it, man. But like for now, I want to first thank like everybody who's listened to this over the years and tuned into it. Like we've had a really wonderful, loyal audience. I've been surprised at how many people like across the board, across the industry, casual car people, just casual folks have tuned in and know what it is. So thank you for listening. And we will be back soon. And above all, like, I want to thank the crew that I've been doing this podcast with the last almost 6 months. Lacey, Alex, Hazel, Danny Howard, our wonderful producer behind the scenes. This has been a great group of people to work with. And I think that you will see all of their work in different forms on Inside EV soon. I'm definitely sure of that, whether it's reviews or videos or more podcasts or what. Like, you're going to be seeing these folks again. So thanks for tuning in, and thank you to my wonderful co-host. This is a bit of a pause, but not the end of what we're going to do in audio. And I'm really looking forward to the future. So thanks again to all involved.
In the words of Arnold Schwarzenegger, we'll be back, but not next week. Thank you all so much for listening. Thank you, as ever, to co-hosts Misco Electric, Lacey, Hazel Southwell, and the boss man, Patrick George. You've been wonderful. Have an ace weekend, and we will see you in some way, shape, or form someday soon.
Someday soon. Bye.